It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi. I am Alan Gervie.
And I'm Michelle Lobato. Hello there.
I got choked up there.
That happens.
Why was I choked up?
You know, it might be because we have a pretty powerful guest on.
Not pretty, powerful. She's pretty and powerful.
Exactly.
So we have to take those words and separate them. But this is a special show and I'm excited about it because, you know, a lot of times we do topical shows, but today we are going to do a show that I want to call This Is Your Life. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you, Michelle, as a 25-year-old?
I was
what's
about
your generation
to say,
called? Generations?
Gen Z.
Z,
yes,
right.
Which actually, just side note, I'm so jealous. The next generation has Generation Alpha. That is such a cool generational name, I think. But when I think, you know, what
this is your life.
Yeah. I just think of key moments that have shaped you, who you are, to be the person you are today, and what motivates you to want to continue on with life.
Does Ralph Edwards mean anything to you?
Ralph Edwards? No, not to me personally, but maybe to our guest.
Okay, so back in the day, way before you were born, there was a show called This Is Your Life, and it was hosted by Ralph Edwards. It was first a radio show for 2 years, and then was a television show for 9 years.
Okay.
And what they did in the show is they talked about the person. They brought people in mm-hmm. from their lives. We're not bringing people in today, but we are going to talk about Gloria Allred, This Is Your Life. Gloria, welcome back to the show. We are so happy to have you, of course. There you go. We always get the applause for women's rights activist, minority rights activist. She's won so many awards, and we can talk about that later, but we want to start with how this all began for Gloria Allred back in Pennsylvania?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Philadelphia. And your mother?
Formerly called the City of Brotherly Love.
Brotherly.
I call it now the City of Sisterly Love.
Or we could call it the City of
Love.
Human Love. Mm.
Well, we could, but not yet.
Not yet. So your father was a salesman. Now, from all accounts, it was a working class family, and your mother was a stay-at-home mom?
Full-time homemaker.
Full-time homemaker. Homemaker. I don't even like that word, homemaker, you know.
Well, full-time mom. How about that?
Yeah, that's good. A full-time mom.
My father was a door-to-door salesman.
Door-to-door?
Which is probably the hardest part.
I did that for 2 summers.
Really?
Yes, I did. I actually paid my way through Brown University.
Wow.
Based on being a door-to-door salesman, I worked 14 hours every day swinging a sample case, selling kids' books. And
amazing.
I sat on my sample case in the yards of all of these people in the country and showed my books. They were educational books.
Wow.
I know how hard that is. And I was just doing it so that I can go to college. Your dad did it to feed a family.
That's right. I think he was also prior to being someone who was selling enlargements for photographs. He was also kind of a fuller brush salesman.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, you don't know what that is either.
No, but anyway, when I was younger, I sold used comic books door to door.
Oh, really?
And also, yeah. And
how
also,
old were
I
you?
Sold potholders that I made.
Wow.
I was about 8 years old, nine years old, something like that.
Ambitious from a young age.
Yeah.
How did it all shape your life as you grew up in this family, obviously hardworking, mm-hmm. you had that kind of motivation to do that at 8 years old? Because I look at my family and kids today and their friends, they seem so entitled, I hate to say it, and they don't have that kind of drive mm-hmm. to better themselves because they're given so much.
Well, I knew my father worked really hard for a living. He worked 6 days a week, and on the seventh, he was at his desk, getting ready to mail his orders in, We'd go to the post office, and he would do that. And then we would go to the park and feed squirrels, or he would send me into a movie theater to see something, but he would be outside and there waiting when I came out. And he always said, I don't need to see that movie. And I realized, I knew that he couldn't afford both of us. Mm-hmm. He was a wonderful father, and I had a wonderful mother, so I was blessed that way. But we only really had enough money to exist for the next day. My father would put enough money out on the table for my mother to go and buy groceries for that day. And the next day, same thing. And so we never had a car. I used public transportation.
Wow.
And even if we went like on a vacation, my father would be going door to door to work during that time.
That's amazing.
At what we called the shore in Atlantic City.
What an
Wildwood.
Example.
Yeah. So, and he never complained ever. One day he was shot with a bullet by people who stole the little money he had when he was going door to door in a rough neighborhood. He never complained. He just said, I had some bad luck, Gloria. And had a very tough life. What I'm saying, he never blamed anybody because of the race or any other reason. He just said he had bad luck.
It's amazing.
And that was the kind of example. And I learned to respect anybody who has a job. Whether you don't earn a little, whether you only earn a little money or a lot of money, and not to blame, just do what you need to do to survive and take care of your family.
But you went to was it a private high school? I know you went.
Oh, no, I only went to public schools. We had no money
University
for private
of Pensil-
schools.
University
well,
of Pennsylvania.
Well, that's different. Yeah, but I'm saying elementary, junior high, which is called middle school these days.
The Philadelphia High School for Girls.
I went to the Philadelphia High School for Girls.
And that was a public school?
It was a public school.
Wow.
And it was all academic, all only for girls, and you had to either have a high IQ, which I didn't feel I had, or do exceptionally well in the middle school, junior high school from which you came. I had to take a test. I don't know why they accepted me. I was just happy that they did. I have no idea why. I did want to leave at one point because it was the top girls from all over the city, and they were daughters of, like, lawyers and bankers and successful business people and accountants and doctors. And I was like the child of parents who only had an eighth grade education.
Oh. Is that how you got to Penn, being at that school?
I wanted to leave, and my counselor talked me out of it. And she said, who do you think is the smartest girl in the class, Gloria? And I told them the name, Sandy Walkowitz. And she was the president of our class. And she said, well, let me see. And she opened her drawer and pulled out two files. And she said, I have your file here and I have Sandy's file here. Your IQ is only 5 points lower than Sandy's. And so you need to stay at Girls High. We're not going to let you leave.
Wow.
You belong here. So I stayed because I was, adults telling me I need to do something. I just listened to them. I realized years later she didn't have my file and Sandy's file in her drawer. She just wanted me to stay, and I did. As a result, I was accepted into the University of Pennsylvania.
How did you pay for it?
My father said, don't worry about money for college. I asked him how. He said, it'll be there for you. If you can get in, I'll pay for it. Mm. So he saved all his life.
He sacrificed so much.
He saved all his life for me. I knew that.
It's amazing.
I was very fortunate. As a result of getting into Penn, I was able to be graduated and then go to NYU, where I commuted to NYU from Philadelphia, where I was teaching full time.
So you were in
at an all boys high risk high school in Philadelphia. I was one of the first female.
Hadn't you
teachers.
Gotten married before that?
Yeah, I met my husband in my freshman year at Penn. I married him in my sophomore year and gave birth in my junior year and divorced him in my senior year.
And you got Lisa Bloom out of that.
And yeah, became a single parent and was graduated, I think, a couple months late. And was from what my father would call, I was graduated from the College of Hard Knocks. So where you learn a lot.
And he later, unfortunately, took his own life.
Yes. He did. He had mental health issues, and so that's why I divorced him but you know, it was just beyond his control, and I couldn't let my daughter grow up in an environment like that. I didn't think that would be good for her. So
then you moved to become a teacher.
I was a teacher.
Little Lisa.
Yeah. First I was an assistant buyer in a department store, Gimbel Brothers department store in Philadelphia, where I also was discriminated against and found out that I wasn't earning as much as another assistant buyer who was a man. And I was told, well, you know, he probably has a family to support and you don't.
Wow.
I said, well, truth was, I did have a daughter to support because I wasn't getting child support. And the man they were referring to wasn't even married and had no children. So that was just part of the stereotypes and sex discrimination.
Around
at that time.
What year was this? I'm trying to...
I was graduated from Penn in 1963.
Okay.
And I worked hard and... So that would have been about 1964, something like that.
Mm-hmm. What was the political and cultural climate like at that time?
That was so interesting because the 60s were full of civil rights activity. And in my master's, I was taking at NYU, commuting, teaching all day.
Wow.
At a high school, commuting 2 days a week by the train from Philadelphia to New York. From my master's degree, two nights a week, and two nights a week, the other two nights I was teaching at the Cerebral Palsy Foundation. But anyway, during my NYU time taking classes there from my master's, a professor said to me, Gloria, you're always talking about rights for African Americans. What about women's rights? And I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, what rights don't women have? I said, I don't know what rights women don't have. I didn't know anything about it. But I learned afterwards because it was very upsetting to me not to know the answer to the question. Well, I hadn't know anything about
it. But your life also taught you lessons about women's rights. Talk a little bit about the trip to Acapulco in 1966.
So, you know, ultimately I moved from Philadelphia to California, and I obtained a job teaching in Watts 1 year after the Watts Rebellion, or riot,
those,
depending on your political point of view.
For those people who don't know about Watts.
There was a rebellion in the community, partly over the fact that they didn't feel they were getting they felt they were getting substandard teachers in Watts, not me, but I wasn't there. The much of Watts was burned down. Then there was white flight from the schools of teachers who were afraid to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there.
Well, I asked to be there because I had been teaching at an all-boys, all-African-American school, young men, in a high school, and I knew how to do that, and I knew that They came from backgrounds where their parents had nothing, or they only had a single mom taking care of them, but they wanted to learn. That I learned that, just like I wanted to learn. And so I asked to teach in Watts. I mean, here I was, an Ivy League graduate from Penn with honors in English. I felt I had a master's in English education. Still not a lawyer.
So tell us, because—
But then I became a labor organizer, too, for the Los Angeles Teachers Association, where I was recruited to be the first female staff person. Eventually, that became United Teachers Los Angeles.
Wow.
But I was an organizer for them, East LA walkouts and so forth.
And then you took the vacation in 1966.
At some point, I took the vacation in Acapulco, and I met somebody that asked me out. He was a doctor. Anyway, he seemed like a nice person, and he said, first I have to go to see a patient. The patient is now in a hotel room recovering, and then we can go to dinner. And then I went to with him, not knowing. And when he opened the door, there was no patient in there, and then he closed it, and then he had a gun, and then he raped me.
Was he really a doctor?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. He said he was. I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
And he had a gun.
And I never went to the police because I felt that nobody would believe me. my word against his in another country. So I do identify from that experience.
Absolutely.
With a lot of victims and survivors who think no one will believe me. And I get that. I mean, it's from my own personal experience that I do understand a lot about what happens to survivors. And that's why I represent so many victims, because I want them to be able to win justice. I never did. But it was a teaching moment for me. And
did it motivate you to go to law school?
Well, I did want to go to law school. Actually, early on, even when I was in Philadelphia, I went to Penn Law School, the counter, to submit my application. Obviously, no internet then. And then as I was filling out the application at the counter at Penn Law School, I realized, what are you doing, Gloria? You don't have any money to pay for this. This is a waste of time. And I had no confidence that I would get a scholarship or even apply for it. So I just took the application and crumpled it up, and I just thought, maybe some other day, some other year, I can't do it now. I have to work and support my daughter.
And then you ended up at Loyola Law School.
When I came to Penn, some years later, I remarried, and I wanted to go to law school, and I did. And I went to Loyola Law School. First, I went to Southwestern. Then I transferred to Loyola.
Why did you transfer?
Southwestern is a great school. Yeah. I gave their commencement address at a law school graduation a few years ago at the Rose Bowl. And I do love Southwestern. But I did transfer to Loyola. And that's where I met my partners, Michael Morocco and Nathan Goldberg, and had a conversation with them near graduation or after graduation. And I asked them, I said, I'd like to form a law firm to fight for justice for women and minorities. And for some reason, they listened to me. They were still trying to figure out years later, what did I say that caused them to do it? Because they had offers from big firms.
Yeah.
And they said to me at that time, well, Gloria, do you know anybody that will be clients? I said, I don't know anybody and nobody knows me. But I think if we do good things for people, good will come back to us. If we do good, we'll do well. And maybe not from that one case, but just it's kind of a karma thing that it will come back to us. And it has. It's been a blessing for 50 years.
What was the first case that really put you on the map? And I just to let you know, we have 8 minutes left, so I want to get through some of the cases.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, we've had so many cases in the 50 years we've been practicing law. But there were just so many. But my partners were not cause people, for the cause. They really didn't know much about women's rights or gay and lesbian rights. But they trusted me. When I said, I think we need to do this, even though it's never been done before, this kind of case, we need to do this. It's the right thing to do. And maybe we'll win. And we did.
What cases stand out? Some of the people you've represented, I mean, so many, too many to mention, but there must be something that stands out in your mind that you felt especially proud of.
I talk about the fact that we do these as a team, all of our attorneys and our partners and associates, and we do everything as a team effort. There's no one individual who's done it alone, nor should there be. So I would say, you know, it was so disturbing to so many people that, the Bill Cosby's criminal conviction was set aside, so to speak. And we have the only civil case that we know of that was filed against Bill Cosby. This is in my documentary, the Bill Cosby issue in my documentary, Seeing All Red, which is still streaming on Netflix. Under documentaries, but we won a civil verdict against Bill Cosby on our allegation that he had sexually abused our client when she was a child, when she was a minor, at the Playboy Mansion in Southern California. So that was important because it was a form of justice.
By the way, just to mention, and I've watched Seeing All Red. I haven't watched it lately, but a few years back. And it's really phenomenal to
see
all of the cases that you talk about and what went on behind the scenes and how you represent people with the values and the advocacy that are so important in protecting women's rights and minority rights.
Thank you. We, of course, did not reveal any client confidential information, and I made clear to the producers that I wouldn't do that if we were going to do a documentary. They said it's okay, it was plenty that we could do that it's public. And so we did it, all credit to the producers and to Netflix for their confidence in me. That was important. The case that Nathan won, a number of cases, you know, against someone who sexually harassed our clients, the $58,250,000 verdict, that was huge because it shows that sexual harassment is being taken seriously by juries, sexual harassment and employment, as well it should, because it's a barrier to the enjoyment of equal opportunity. If a woman or a man, and we have represented men in sexual harassment cases as well in employment, who have been harassed by other men in the workplace, but that, you know, that victims do have an opportunity to win justice, and they don't have to sit there and take it and be in the no-win situation of, oh, what if I complain? But if I don't complain, then what? You know, they can win justice. So that was really important. We've done a lot of child sexual abuse cases. I could go on and on, but
I know you. That's it. I know.
Yeah,
you're,
for now.
You're not short of words. You can
No, not short of words, short of time.
Short of time, exactly. Here's Michelle. She's, you know, starting out. You and I, you know, we're kind of out the cockers. I hate to say it.
I'm not. I'll tell you what. I'm 84, and I'm proud of it.
You look amazing.
I think you should get a medal when you get to my age and you're a woman, because all of us have gone through so much. But I'm just a
I say that jokingly because I'm the same way. You know, with my energy, we talked earlier about
you
how
have
I don't
a lot
drink
of energy.
I don't drink coffee and I have all this energy. But what would you tell Michelle, which is kind of like talking to your younger self, about how she should think about moving forward in her career and the young people, the young Gloria Allred? What is so important as you look back on the years and all the successes?
Well, I don't know enough about Michelle's particular situation to really give her.
Okay, just do a
advice,
general.
But I will say general.
I'm using her as an example.
I will just, you know, you have to root yourself in your values. And also think about what is it you really want to do. The best of all worlds, and most people don't have this, but if you are able to achieve it, is to find a passion that you have in work that you would like to do, that you will not only be paid well for, but that that you will love doing. You will get up every day and want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And also you need to know how to protect yourself if something happens or you're placed with a difficult, who surround yourself with people or who can give you good advice, whose values you respect and have integrity, and, you know, learn what you can do if you are a victimized. We don't want any of our loved ones or friends to ever be victimized, but almost all of us will be at some point, maybe more than one point in our lives. What can you do about it? And, you know, faced with adversity, just know, you know, there's usually sunshine after the storm.
Yeah.
So,
great advice.
You know, just you're not the only one, which sometimes doesn't make it feel better for you, but it will get better and you will get through this. So don't let it kind of knock you down. It will make you stronger if you learn how to deal with it.
In our last minute and a half, what's next for Gloria Allred?
I will just feel that I will continue to be blessed if I can continue to do what I do. There's nothing else I want to do in life. I love fighting for justice for my clients. I like winning for my clients. I like settling for my clients, confidential settlements, if that's what they would like, and not have to go through years and years in a court of law publicly testifying. Whatever form they think is best for them, if it can happen and we can help, we would like to try. We can't help everyone, but we will help those that we can help, and we all have a passion for justice in our firm. So that's what I want to continue to do, and at least until the end, whenever that is. I had I called him an uncle, but he was really like a cousin of mine who practiced law until he was about 99 years old, walked to his office every day. So I'm feeling great, and I just I'm very happy that I can do what I can do and enjoy the confidence of my clients.
The impact that you've had on so many people's lives that is so meaningful.
And there's so much more to do, and so many people, I just love to see the transformation. You know, they start in tears and they end up with a big smile on their face. That's for me, is everything. And then they inspire their friends and their coworkers and their family because they're stronger as a result.
And they can't even thank you enough. But I can thank you enough because this has been your life so far. There's lots left, but it's been an amazing time to hear you talk about it. This is your life, Gloria Allred.
Thank you, Alan Gervey.
Thanks
the new Ralph Edwards for our time.
The new Ralph Edwards. Thanks for being here with us, Gloria. And thank you all for listening. What a show. See you next time.